So as we wait for her to join us on the line, it looks like Andrew is scrambling to get her on there. I want to ask both of you guys, and Drace, I haven't had a chance to really talk to you about this. I know that you have been a little bit skeptical, and maybe you've said that you are willing to give your spot in line when it comes to the vaccine because you want others to go ahead of you.
Absolutely. And I say this knowing that, listen, anything could happen to anyone. You know what I mean? But yeah, I'm that guy. I just heard that we had the worst week. I mean, and I mean, like, it was like 9/11 and a bunch of other calamities in America combined, and we're still kind of passing those things up. So yeah, I'm willing to give somebody else my place in line.
Okay, so we do have Dr. Angela Rasmussen on the line with us now. Good morning, doctor.
Good morning, Ursula.
Thank you so much for joining us again. We are just a month into the mass vaccination campaign to stop this pandemic. And as you know, doctor, the Trump administration has unexpectedly shifted gears now to speed up the delivery of shots. Health and Human Services Secretary Alex Azar announced the abrupt changes today.
Supply we have for order by states rather than holding second doses in physical reserve.
So essentially he says that they're going to just let all of them go out now and then not wait for that second dose. And then secondly, he says states are going to start vaccinating other groups that are lower down in the priority scale, including people who are 65 and older and younger people with certain health problems. What do you make of those changes?
Well, I think in some part, those changes are due to the fact that President-elect Biden announced that he basically planned to do the same thing once he was inaugurated. So to a certain degree, this is just moving that timeline up by a week. I think that it's probably the right thing to do. But more importantly, it doesn't address the problems that we're still having. And that is that we currently have millions of doses of vaccines that have been allocated to states that are ready to be given to people and that are not being given to people. We are having a major problem with distribution, more than we're having a problem with supply right now. If we can overcome those distribution problems, then yes, it's absolutely going to be beneficial to increase supplies while simultaneously ramping up manufacturing of those second doses. But right now, that doesn't really address the problem we are actually having with vaccine rollout.
So then what are the implications of getting the first shot, essentially, but not getting the second one? So might we find ourselves in a position where there are millions of people who have the first dose and they have an issue getting the second dose? And how long will it be before they're able to get the second one?
Well, that's an excellent question. And I think that right now, nobody is really talking seriously about giving people only one dose. This has been brought up as something we could do to potentially stretch vaccine supplies. I personally oppose that, as do many others, because it simply hasn't been tested. We only know efficacy with two doses. But some recent information just came out today, announced by the World Health Organization, that the Pfizer vaccine has no impact on efficacy if you delay the second dose for up to 6 weeks. So that effectively doubles the time that people have with that particular vaccine to get the second dose and have the vaccine remain effective. And the good news is we do know that there is some protection that is given by the first dose about 2 weeks after you get it for both the Pfizer and Moderna vaccines. So I think it's reasonable to say that, okay, given this information, we'll delay the second dose by a couple weeks for some people. And in the meantime, we'll get the manufacturers to ramp up the supplies. But again, this doesn't address the problem that we're having that's actually before this. The real bottleneck right now is distribution. We're not getting the vaccines that we have already into people's arms. So I think that we really need to address that first before we start worrying about these other things while simultaneously ramping up manufacturing and making a plan to get as many people vaccinated as possible.
Okay. Now, is there any, I heard a while ago a lot of talk about there being some confusion around if you get the vaccine, if you're able to still spread COVID to other people. Is there any more information or new information about the possibility of that?
So So there's not for the Pfizer and Moderna vaccines, but they did do a study with a recent trial for the AstraZeneca vaccine that has been licensed or authorized for use in the UK. And they did find that that vaccine reduced the number of asymptomatic infections significantly, suggesting that while it may not completely prevent infection in most people, it does have an effect on that as well. My suspicion for both the Pfizer and Moderna vaccines is that it probably does offer some degree of protection. It's very rare to see a vaccine that is 94-95% efficacious at preventing symptomatic disease that doesn't also have an impact on viral transmission or, you know, the amount of people who have the vaccine who will be infected. So I think that even though we don't have any data and we still need to collect that data, there's probably some good reasons to think that the vaccines will at least reduce transmission and offer partial protection against infection as well as very good protection against symptomatic disease.
Dr. Rasmussen, our state is number 3 in the country when it comes to the percentage of adults who are willing to take the vaccine, and that's just over 50%. 25%, though, of adults here say they would refuse. That's still way too low, but there are other states who have it obviously much worse. And then recently, one of our reporters, Hannah Scott, told us that about a third or 30%, close to a third, of healthcare workers have been refusing the vaccine. Your reaction to that?
So this is not surprising. I mean, it's disappointing and it's a huge challenge and it's worrisome for the long-term impact of the vaccines, because what we do know about what the likely herd immunity threshold is that it's probably fairly high. And we know that from places like Manaus, Brazil, where the virus has infected upwards of 70% of the population and is still spreading. That suggests that in order to get to the herd immunity threshold, which is the number of people who are immune that can effectively reduce transmission in the community, is probably at least 75%, if not higher. So we really need everybody who is eligible to take a vaccine to take it eventually. I think for a lot of people, though, including some of those healthcare workers and including some of the people, the 25% of people who said that they wouldn't take it, I don't think that those people are beyond convincing. I think that if we continue to reach out to people to help understand what their concerns actually are, we might be able to address a lot of them. I know a lot of people have been skeptical of the expedited vaccine approval process. And I think that if people are met where they are, if their questions are taken seriously and answered and addressed, then that may convince people to change their minds. It's really going to be on myself and others, my colleagues in the scientific community, to try to win hearts and minds. And I think that starts with listening to what people's concerns are and trying to address them as best as we can in an evidence-based way.
Would you mind if we try that kind of in real time here? Because just before we got you on the air, Dres admitted that he's willing to allow others who may not necessarily be in front of him in line to go ahead. Dres, maybe you can ask some of the questions that you have that concern you our doctor.
Yeah.
Sure.
So I am definitely one of the nervous, but I can be spoken to and talked into it. It just takes time, right? So I love everything that you're saying. So what are some of the other impacts of this virus, right? Not fever and tiredness and headache and chills. What are some of the other things that we're seeing, side effects to getting the virus?
To getting the virus or the vaccine?
I mean, the vaccine is, I apologize, the vaccine. Sorry about that.
So the vast majority of the side effects are exactly what you just described. The thing is that what makes it different than your annual flu vaccination is that these symptoms are a little bit more severe than they normally would be for that. So while you may have a sore arm after you get a flu shot, I know that I did when I got my flu shot earlier last year with G, I had a sore arm for a couple days. In this case, you might have a really sore arm. You might have a fever that lasts for a day or two. You might have body aches elsewhere. It might feel like you actually have the flu. But that is actually a sign that the vaccine is working, even though it's relatively unpleasant. The vast majority of people who've had these more severe symptoms have been able to treat them fairly effectively with over-the-counter pain relievers. Now, that said, right now, the really rare adverse events, we don't know. So there are a couple allergic reactions that have been reported. People who had a history of severe allergies went into anaphylactic shock. That was treated in every case because most of these vaccines are being given in a hospital or a clinic where you can rapidly treat somebody who goes into anaphylactic shock with an EpiPen or, you know, an epinephrine injection. That is the most common, rarer, severe adverse event that's been reported. In the trials, a couple people were reported to have Bell's palsy, which is a temporary paralysis, partial paralysis of the face. Now, that it's hard to say based on only the trial data if that was related to the vaccine or not. Now, Bell's palsy can happen idiopathically, which means that there's no known cause. It happens frequently in people who don't have any vaccines or pre-existing conditions at all. So we don't know for a fact that that is related to the vaccine. It was only a couple people out of, you know, 40,000. So right now, it's still unclear what the really rare side effects are going to be for the vaccine. But for the vast majority of people who are experiencing severe side effects, it's just like a really unpleasant flu. It's like you might have to take a couple days off work, but it's nothing that is going to cause any permanent harm.
Dr. Rasmussen, I got to share a story, actually, and maybe this would also help ease your mind, Dres. My father, who I've talked about quite often on our show, he's 89 years old. He's in a long-term care facility, and he was going to be a holdout. He was going to be one of three or four in that center that wasn't going to take the shot, and he had a doctor who talked to him, and he just said, I ended up really trusting her, you know, because we were all, as his family, were like, oh my gosh, you need to do it, you know. But of course, my dad has a mind of his own. He's very, very coherent right now and very smart. And he said, you know, I don't feel comfortable. But he finally got a conversation with a doctor that he ended up trusting, and he got it. And I'll tell you what, he barely felt it, and he's had zero side effects, zero. And he's someone who is he's got a leg amputation. He's in, you know, often in a wheelchair, and he did not feel one bit.
Yeah, it's worth noting, Ursula, and I'm really happy to hear that story. It's worth noting, though, that the majority of people don't have these severe side effects. So some people do. It's unpleasant, but you have an even better chance of not really having any side effects at all besides some soreness at the injection site. So I wouldn't, you know, I personally would take these vaccines given these safety profiles.
Okay, what I have one other question. Okay, in the spirit of, I don't know, honoring the persons like myself who are like, still pretty nervous, if you could give an amount of time where we could know more about the long-term impacts of this vaccine, what amount of time would you suggest where you say, okay, look, I'm honoring you. I get it. You're a little nervous. You want to see the impact of this on the body. Is there an amount of time that you say, you know what, by this amount of time, we've seen enough to know if there's long-term impacts on your body, yay or nay?
So almost all of the severe side effects associated with vaccinations occur right around the time that you get the vaccine. So really, the amount of time to evaluate that is really the time it will take to vaccinate enough people that you're going to actually start detecting those really rare side effects, the one in a million type events. And that really is what we've started detecting in terms of these allergic reactions. Now, I'm not saying that we might not see other severe adverse events emerge that are very rare but very serious. But really, I think it's more than the long-term effect of getting the vaccine. I'm more worried about the amount of time it's going to take for us to figure out what these really rare effects are that happen right around the time that you actually get it. And I think that that's going to depend on how effectively we can actually distribute the vaccine and how many people in the higher priority groups we can convince to take the vaccine. But I'm not particularly worried about longer-term effects coming from these vaccines, in part because we've already actually given these vaccines to people for months. We started phase one trials of these vaccines back in February or March. So we do actually have data from people who've been immunized for months now, and we know what happens to them long term. And so far, all of them are completely fine.
Dr. Rasmussen, we always appreciate your time. I can't believe how quickly this segment went, but we will talk to you again next Tuesday. Thank you so much.
My pleasure.
Thank you.
Take care.